Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. New SkinGuard Sensitive Razor. The first razor of its kind designed to stop irritation on sensitive skin. Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Thursday, the 16th of January.
Coming up today, the Irish cricket team stun the West Indies.
And that's the end of it, a dot delivery. Ireland, they go on to win this first T20 international. What a match we've witnessed.
We meet Ireland's number one Green Bay Packers fan.
That's the game that I was at. The Bears were up in Lambeau. And like, Shep, I don't know if you've been there, but like, my eyes are there at my husband, and he described it when we were sitting there, like going to the moon to watch a game. It was completely bonkers.
And Irish soccer international Claire Shine opens up to me about overcoming her darkest days.
It's like a part of me now that I'm proud of, whereas before I was kind of embarrassed, kind of ashamed about it, and I was always running away from it, whereas now it's bringing it along with me because it is who I am, and I'm really happy about it.
All that and much more between now and 8 o'clock. Text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Marie, closest I've been since retirement to getting a sporting injury today.
What happened? Is it the paper cut?
No, that's healing up nicely. A lot of Savilon on it and it's doing the job, a little bit of salt.
I was really worried. Last couple of days, lost sleep.
This is nearly a real proper one. I was driving, what's that road outside RTÉ there?
That's Stillorgan Dual Carriageway. Coming
down that, and I'm after getting a new car and it has heated seats, so I had to take off my jacket. I was getting, you know, that horribly hot. You know, do you ever get uncomfortably hot?
I haven't been lucky enough to be in a car with heated seats, so I'm just going to take your
word
for it.
It's a game changer, believe me. You need to spoil yourself with this at least. But stupidly anyway, and look, I know it was wrong. I tried to take my jacket off while it was at the red light, and then the light went green and I was there. I'm capable of completing this job while driving. And I got a little bit close to the inside lane and I got a flash from the car behind me and a honk. I was like, oh. So I straightened up and went to apologise. Who came up the inside beside me?
Go on.
Davy Fitz. He was just about to give me a bollock and I was like, Davy!
I was about to say, you're lucky that you just got a honk and flash lights, because I'd say if he got at you at all, he would have been mincemeat.
Absolutely. I was lucky. I was lucky on two fronts. Not only that it was, that it was stupid doing what I was doing, but once that, like, imagine if he got out of the car, baiting me around, that's the Oregon Road. The shame of it.
He's a lot smaller than you, but I'm telling you, I wouldn't back against him in a fight.
There's bound to be incidents out there, though, when you've been in the car and come up against a coach, one of your fitness advisors, someone close to you in your club. Has this ever happened to you?
No.
Anyone listening? 51552. Have you ever got caught in the yellow box and your coach coming against you? There's surely enough cases out there.
I'm going to throw something out there. I'd imagine that it happens to you a lot more than it happens to other people.
You've seen my driving, haven't you? It's bad.
So overnight, there was a historic win for the Ireland cricket team. They beat the West Indies. We caught up with Captain Andy Balbirnie. But first, let's hear the commentary from the closing stages.
Goes straight. Hands in the air for a long time and catch taken. Delaney, the fielder. Ireland celebrates. And the crowd goes silent here in Grenada. Edge. Is that a dismissal? They're celebrating. And that's the end of it. A dot delivery. Ireland, they go on to win this first T20 international. What a match we've witnessed.
Unbelievable. Josh Little, fantastic experience on those young shoulders. Wonderful last over. Just 8 conceded. Incredible performance here for Ireland.
So Ireland claimed a thrilling 4-1 victory in their T20 opener against the West Indies yesterday. And we are now delighted to be joined by Ireland cricket captain Andrew Balbirnie. Andrew, what a super win. You're making huge waves back home. It must feel great.
Yeah, it does. I don't know if it's really sunk in with the lads what we've actually done. I kind of reminded them after the game that, you know, it's a great achievement to be able to have beaten the world champions in their own backyard. But what would be even more special is if we can come home having won a series. So we travelled to St. Kitts today. We've just got into the hotel. Everyone's a bit tired, I think probably a bit emotionally drained, but we've certainly realised that we've done something special.
And for you as captain, we had you on here just when you were announced as captain, and since then, you know, I know you had big hopes and big ambitions, but like, you're on the right road now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I suppose, after the one-day series, when we lost 3-0 and we came so close in that second game, it would have been easy to kind of carry on with the tour and, compete in a couple of games. But I think the lads have been outstanding in the way they've worked hard at training, and we have a specific plan how we want to go out and execute. And we did that. I thought we were outstanding in the field yesterday. We caught all our catches, and in T20 cricket, just small things like that and fine margins can win you games of cricket.
Andy, tell us, the changeover obviously from one day international T20, what's the biggest difference there? It seemed much more enjoyable to watch. You looked like you were enjoying yourself an awful lot more.
Yeah, I think that's something that we could try to instill to the guys, is that we are living our best days here. Like, we are playing against the world champions in their own backyard in front of a few thousand people of passionate supporters. Like, we truly are very lucky in what we do. And if you're not enjoying it, then there's something wrong. I suppose the big difference would be that it's a lot more fast. And I suppose as a captain, I was learning yesterday, because you have to make decisions quickly. The eye cricket will be a bit more slower and a bit more T20 would be a bit more free flowing. So you're always on the go and you're always on edge. And in a high scoring game like that, and the ball getting hit out of the park regularly, you got to kind of think on your feet. And fortunately for me, all the bowlers were so clear with what they wanted to do, and that therefore makes my job a lot easier.
Andy, is that what is good about this tour? Instead of maybe just getting one game or, a number, to be able to play them in one day international, then straight into T20. I know it from rugby. If you played New Zealand over there once, you probably didn't get to learn the lessons, whereas you're getting consistency of performance against world class.
Yeah, absolutely. And you get to understand players better. So we're going into yesterday's game knowing where a lot of their players like to hit the ball. So I suppose, like you said, rather than just going and playing one game, having a good laugh and having a crack playing one game, you get to actually play two format series. And that's what we're going to do from now on. We're going to go around the world playing against teams in multi-format, hopefully test cricket as well. So that's the sort of stage we're at now. It's only going to get tougher. It's going to continue to get tough. And if we win games like that, more teams then might want to play us, and it kind of snowballs like that. So as a group and as an organisation, for Cricket Ireland, it was just a momentous feat, I suppose, yesterday.
And you tell us about Paul Sterling's display. We just saw how impressive he was. 8 sixes, 6 fours is a brilliant batting display.
Yeah, I think I said it after the game. It's probably as well as I've ever seen him hit a ball, particularly in T20 cricket. He's our leading batter in all formats of the game. He's been the best batter we've had for a number of years, potentially the last decade, and he's still only 29. With himself and Kevin just completely set the tone of how the day was going to go. To go out and bat the way they did, just instilled so much confidence into quite a young and an inexperienced group compared to the sort of team that West Indies have. So for the young guys to be able to see how the guys went about it and take the confidence of, I could go out there and do that myself. Gareth Delaney, who's, still relatively young when it comes to international cricket, came out and played really free-flowing, and that was great to see. So, Sterlo is a world-class player, and he will be for the next number of years, and he's so important to what we're trying to do.
Andrew, they must be responding really well to you as well.
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's hard to say. I've only been in charge for 4 games now, but I'd like to think I have the respect of all the players. I've known a lot of them. I've played a lot of under-19 cricket with a lot of these guys, and a lot of them are from Dublin, so I know them through that as well. But we all want to do the same thing. We're all desperate to play for Ireland, and once we do cross that line, everyone has that same goal. So once you're all sort of singing off the same hymn sheet, it's very easy. But like I said, it was great. It was a great win, but at the same time, we've got a chance to win a series, which would be something we can all be very proud of.
Absolutely, and you've got the focus for next game already, but you might just take us back, just for yourself personally, with 4 runs in a tight game, What are you saying to the lads out there, you know, when it's real pressure?
Yeah, it was difficult because it was so noisy at the ground. My voice is literally gone at the end because I'm shouting orders at guys in the boundary who just literally can't hear me. I suppose my job in those sort of situations is make sure that the person with the ball in their hand is clear and cool. Whether it means just slowing it down for a minute or something like that, just to, you know, catch your breath. And like I said, they were all clear with what they wanted to do. Okay, sometimes they might not execute what they want to do, but as long as they're clear with how they want to go about it, then, you know, I'm happy. I suppose the T20 cricket, four runs is a small margin. So guys, you know, diving around, saving boundaries in the field, all those small little plays in the game just create something big, and that was the win.
There are testing times at the moment for Cricket Ireland. There's no doubt about that, Andrew. But just how much of a boost does it give your sport to have such a win like that?
Yeah, it does. Naturally, we're competing against a lot of bigger sports in our country. And like I've kind of said it a couple of times to the guys that, you know, yes, we've lost a couple of fixtures here and there for whatever reasons, but all we can do is go out and try to win games of cricket. And like I said earlier, it's that sort of snowball effect. If we can win games on that stage, it gets more publicity. People then come in and say, you know what, I might want to get behind this team. And it just rolls like that. So all I can do and all we can do out here is try to win games of cricket, and then hopefully things will sort themselves out in the background.
So today was a travel day for you, is that right? And you're back on Saturday?
Yeah, we've travelled from our beach resort in Grenada to our beach resort in St. Kitts.
So you need a bag, man.
I know, it's not the worst gig, and I got a room by the beach as captain, so you get a few perks for the job.
You were not wrong.
We've travelled the rest day today, and then we train tomorrow, and then the last two games are back to back. You know, they'll be coming out all guns blazing, knowing that they've got to win but two games to win the series. So we will expect a backlash, but I hope, you know, our boys will be ready to counter that.
What would it mean to you and to your team to win this series?
It would mean a lot. I think, like I said to the guys, we have a chance to create history. It hasn't been done before. So, but at the same time, you know, I've got to be aware that we've got a T20 World Cup at the end of the year. So everything we do in T20 cricket is leading to that World Cup. We want to expose guys to this level as often as possible and see how they come out of it. You know, like the last game, Josh Little, you know, he's only 20 or 21. So to give him that last over, the confidence that he can take going into a World Cup, knowing that he's done it, you know, against the West Indies, stuff like that. So the end goal, I suppose, is that T20 World Cup. But look, if we win a series in the West Indies to start off the year, it would certainly be a high point in my career, no doubt.
Andy, congratulations. Best of luck for Saturday. We're all so proud of you. Keep it going, and we'll chat to you soon.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, guys.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette, new skin guard sensitive with unique skin guard technology, taking the pressure off the blades and your shave. Say bye to shave irritation. Gillette, the best a man can get. Game on 2FM.
So, Donica, next up we have an interview with Claire Shine. She's a current Republic of Ireland international, and she plays with Glasgow City and also played with Cork City. And I've been looking forward to playing this and for people to hear it, because it's one of those interviews that I'll never forget. She really battles with her mental health, and a little while ago she attempted suicide, and she has been really brave to come out and speak about it. And I have to say, it's one that really touched me, and we wrote a piece today for RTÉ on the website, and there's been a massive reaction. It's a tough one for her.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's hear it, and we'll might catch up after.
Claire, it's been an emotional time for you. You've publicly opened up about your battle with mental health. It's not an easy thing to do, to bare your soul, but you did it in such an eloquent way with a letter to your younger self. Claire, why did you decide now to open up?
I think now is the right time for me to come clean with myself and to everybody else. It's been a long journey, and I've been battling in silence for a long period of time. So I think now I'm in a position where everything is going well. And I think if this is something that will reach someone who needs it, then it's one less person that needs to go through something like this.
It's been a journey, and from reading about it, it's
been an absolute roller coaster, but something that's been constant in your life always is sport, and in ways that's fantastic, but it also brings difficulties as well when you have so much talent and it becomes part of your identity.
Yeah, of course. I'm kind of known for the person on the pitch, and it's important for me to be able to develop the person off the pitch as well, and to be a good person and to help those who are in need, as well as develop on the pitch as well. But to try and find that balance is quite difficult, and it's still something that I'm working on, and it'll probably be something that I'll be working on for a long time, but I'm in a good place now with it, so it's time to kind of push forward.
You're still so young as well, Claire, so I imagine like even trying to understand that you have to develop the person off the pitch is difficult as well.
Yeah, it is. It's probably the most difficult thing for anybody to do, and to see where you can strengthen and to work on all your weaknesses. I know from experience that that's something that I've always struggled with, is the balance between football and a social life. And I think for anybody who is listening to this and who is kind of struggling with that, it's really important for them to know that self-love and self-care is something that you need to do to make sure that you're performing on the pitch as well.
So many people, as you said, like, are going to hear this and think, you know, I've been there, I've been through it as well. And you're so brave to tell your story. But I'm going to take a little bit and just tell me, when did you kind of maybe start feeling, okay, this isn't the way I should feel, or this isn't the way I should be acting?
I think it was maybe 2014. It was actually a really good year for me on the pitch. And as a player, I had won Under-19 Player of the Year. We qualified for the European Under-19s, got my first senior call up. But in between all that, I actually broke my leg, which was the first time I had a bad injury, and I had to do things by myself, and I was away from the team. It wasn't a long period of time, because it was only 5 or 6 weeks before we had the European final, so I was rushing to get back, and I was just putting myself under a lot of pressure. And that's when I had my first panic attack. And for anyone who had a panic attack, it's like you're drowning, it's like you're dying. So for me to go through that, as well as kind of deal with the leg break, was something that I had never experienced. And they started becoming really frequent, and I started to kind of, I wasn't really able to sleep, because I would wake up in fear that I was going to have a panic attack. So when you're playing at this level and you're not sleeping, it kind of all rolls into one. And it was when my leg broke for the second time, I met up with, it was actually, I was playing with Rahini at the time, and the manager sat me down and spoke to me and said that he thinks that I need to speak to someone. So when I spoke to them, we went around it, maybe a difficult way, but I actually went back into the boot so people wouldn't actually ask me what's wrong. It was more so I was putting it on my leg than what was going on in my head, because it was more, it took people's attention away from what I was really going through. And from then on, wasn't playing football or anything. I kind of took myself away from it for a while. And that's when I reached out to my brother and told him the in-depth thoughts that I was having. And he got in touch with someone from Pieta House, and it kind of went from there.
So what was going on in your head, Claire?
I was having suicidal thoughts. I didn't want to be here anymore. I didn't want to play football. Everything I ever dreamed of just completely left my mind. It was almost like, growing up, I was always dreaming about playing football for Ireland, or even playing camogie for Cork at the highest level. Like, I wanted to do everything, and then in the space of 5 or 6 months, all I could think about was this, and I had no ambitions. I had lost all motivation to do anything. So when I went to Pieta House the first time, it was brilliant, and I got a lot from it. I learned a lot about myself in there. And when I came out, I thought I was invincible. I thought, this is it, you know, I'm cured. But when you don't give yourself that self-love, and when you don't give yourself that kind of self-care that you need, and when you're someone who struggles with mental health, it just comes back, and it doesn't, if you don't check in with yourself and you don't keep on top of when you're happy, you automatically just go back to being sad again. It's like, if you don't work on something off the, or on the pitch, then you're not going to improve. So that's kind of the way I look at it now. But back then, I wasn't knowledgeable about that. I didn't know anything about it, so I didn't really know that I needed to keep on top of things. And then 6 months later, I found myself back in the same position. But when I came out of Pieta House, 2 months later, I signed for Glasgow, my first professional contract. And it's always something that I've dreamed of, playing professional football and moving away from home and stuff like that. It was a shock to the system as well, as I thought I was in a better place than what I was, and I didn't give myself that time I needed. So when I moved to Glasgow the first time, it just backfired. I became really homesick, and the thoughts started coming back again, and I wasn't sleeping, and I was trying to perform. So it was a year after I had got out of Pieta House, I found myself back in there. And that's when I turned to alcohol. I felt like it eased the pain. It brought out a different side to me. I was confident. I was always laughing and joking and being centre of attention, when really it was somewhere that, and something that I felt eased the pain and took my mind away from where it really was.
So it was just a distraction, really. You wrote about walking the streets of Cork City with tears in your eyes and how empty you felt. Tell me about that night in particular.
Yeah, it was probably one of many nights that I had where I had no money left to get myself home. So I found myself walking, and it was just an overload of thoughts that I couldn't really control anymore. It was like a tunnel vision of, this is what I'm going to do and this is how I'm going to do it. And it was like 6 months of thinking like this. I wasn't in control of anything anymore. I couldn't make any decisions, and I felt like I was just letting everybody down. And that's when I did what I did. And it was life-changing in a way. Do I regret doing it? Probably not. If I was in that position again, I probably would have did the exact same thing. But because in a way it's made me a much better person. It's taught me a lot about myself and how strong I really am as a person. And for being so low.
But it was a very difficult night for you, yeah. And you wrote in your piece about waking up and seeing your friend there and knowing the doctor mm-hmm. was outside the door. What was that moment like for you, just realising you were still there?
Yeah, it was a massive eye-opener for me. Amanda, she actually used to play football for Ireland. She's my best friend, and without her, I don't think I would have got through what I did. She was there for me through everything that went on. She dragged me out of a really dark place. And obviously, I'm really thankful for that. And I'm really grateful that she is still in my life today and is still my best friend. And we, but she was actually asleep on the hospital bed, so I was a bit confused when I woke up, and she was crying and I was crying, but she kind of just sat me down and said, look, we'll get through this and we'll get through it together. So
where did things go from there?
So I was already in touch with a man, Andrew Fideau was his name. Cork City actually put me in touch with him because I had been turning up to training and turning up to games under the influence of alcohol. It, at the time, took over my life, and I didn't really see anything past it. It was like, I thought it was my best friend. I thought, it got rid of all my enemies and stuff. So when this happened, I was part of an alcohol centre in Cork City who would be linked with Pieta House, and they were linked with Arbor House as well. So when I was got in touch with Andrew, he brought me through kind of a lifestyle change more so. I went, he involved kind of a fitness and well-being program where we went for runs, did different fitness classes, worked on things to make me feel good, and it kind of gave me the bite to go back and start training again, and he gave me the belief that I've been looking for throughout that period of my life. So yeah, Andrew was a massive influence on me, and the support group, they were excellent and they always believed in me, and it kind of kicked on from there when I went through the fitness and well-being program within the centre. So it kind of just went from there.
The experiences have been so tough, Claire, but without them, would you be the person that you are now?
No, definitely not. It's definitely opened my eye to a lot of different things, and it's pushed me harder than before, even when I'm training and stuff. Like, it's like a part of me now that I'm proud of. Whereas before I was kind of embarrassed, kind of ashamed about it, and I was always running away from it, whereas now I'm bringing it along with me because it is who I am, and I'm really happy about it.
Are you surprised by the amount of people that have felt like you have, or reached out, or just can relate to the things that you've gone through?
Yeah, of course. Over Christmas just gone, I kind of spoke to my friends and stuff about it, and said that this was something that I was interested in doing. So when I spoke to them about it and kind of opened up, I found a few of them speaking to me about certain things and what way to go about it and how to get out of a routine that they're kind of stuck doing. And I found it very powerful, because if I can do something like this, then anybody can. And if I can get through the hardest times in my life, then anybody can, you know. It is really tough, and for anyone who is going through it, who's listening, just to keep at it and to reach out. I know how hard it is to reach out, and it's probably the most daunting, because you think you're going to be judged and you don't think anybody understands, when more times than not people have been through what you have been through. So once we start talking and making it normalize it, it'll be a lot easier for people to come clean.
You're very brave. Do you feel brave?
Yeah, I feel brave. Yeah, I do. I don't know, it's always something that I wanted to do, but I never really had the courage to do it, because I didn't think I had it in me to speak about it. It's always a battle that I've had in myself, and it's always something that has brought me down. So if I can start speaking about it, it can only be a positive.
Football often feels unimportant, like, especially when we're having conversations like this, but it is important as well. And where are you now, just in terms of your career and your hopes and dreams and aspirations?
Well, football has always been an escape for me. I love playing football. It's somewhere that I can go and express myself. I hope to keep being happy and to keep enjoying my football, and if opportunities arise, I would be open to kind of looking to see where my football career can go. I'm currently in Glasgow City and preparing for the Champions League quarterfinal in March. So if someone told me this time last year that I'd be in this position, I would have probably laughed, and a lot of people would have laughed. But it's been a long 12 months for me from where I was this time last year. So I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm going to grab it with both hands.
You said as well that you have to work on being happy off the field, and it makes you happier on the pitch as well. How do you work at that?
Well, I've started, I check in with myself once a week just to see how my week went, and what I could improve on. If I was unhappy, what was making me unhappy? My sleep and my diet and my exercise and stuff. I think exercise is probably the best medicine. And if you can control that, then of course it's gonna impact you on the pitch as well. I've started listening to a lot of podcasts and reading books. I'm currently reading Tyson Fury's book, so he's someone who went through a really dark time too, so it's nice to be able to relate to someone as big as him. And if he can do it as well, so can I. So I tend to read people, other people's stories, to kind of give me that motivation to keep going. And yeah, it seems to be working so far anyway.
What an incredibly brave person. Like Claire Shine there, Marie, they're tough interviews, aren't they, for you personally? Like, just there's a brave person bearing their soul.
Yeah, and I think, like, with mental health, you have to be so careful. And I was really conscious of that. I knew that she was going to open up about everything that she'd been through. So I just wanted to be able to give her the space to tell her story without saying the wrong thing or making her feel uncomfortable or making her feel awkward. It was actually the first interview that she had done. Mm. She did a couple after me, but yesterday was with me was the very first one. So it was, she said herself, like, just saying the words out loud, you know, like hearing them, it was a challenge. But she's inspirational, really, Jonica, because, like, that's the public listening. I mean, everybody is hearing you, at hearing about your lowest point, your darkest moment, your struggles. You're so vulnerable, and she's doing it because she wants to be able to help other people. Because, like, we talk about it quite a bit, like, it's a really tough world now for young people today. And she, like, the one thing that's sitting across from her, she is so young, you know, she looks so young, and like, she's her whole life ahead of her. Like, it was just so lovely for her to know that as well.
But she's doing that for a reason, isn't she? She's doing it for the people like her, the other Claire Shine that's sadly maybe walking around the streets of Cork, like she said, with tears in her eyes.
Yeah.
It's for someone listening there that might be struggling.
And she said as well that when she only told her friends about at Christmas, she actually only fully opened up to everybody at Christmas. And she was surprised the amount of people then that felt the same, or that needed her and wanted to talk to her and were using her as a sounding board. And she just helped so many people just by telling them what she was going through. And we've had so many texts in about just people listening to her. One person sitting in their car listening to the interview in the same position themselves a few months ago, and just commending Claire for being so brave and for being so strong just to be able to open up about her issues. Texts in from Ashing and Cork, and Tim there just echoing those sentiments.
Yeah, it's amazing. And if anyone is struggling and doesn't feel well, Claire mentioned that there, Pieto House has a 24-hour, 7 days a week helpline, which is available to everyone, 1-800-247-247. And you can also go to rte.ie/helplines if you need any help in any way. Let's look out for each other.
FM. Game on 2FM.
With Gillette Skin Guard Sensitive, the first razor of its kind designed to stop skin irritation. Revolutionary technology, taking the pressure off the blades and your shave. Gillette, the best a man can get.
The man open left.
Game on, Iron America.
Okay, time to turn stateside, and we're joined by our favourite American, no, not Kim Kardashian. It's Jeff Shepherd. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing great. We have Kim and I have similar bank accounts and dating history.
I could have well imagined it. Well, we're chatting Packers, and we're also delighted to be joined by Ivan Ní Chuilín, one of probably the second biggest Packers fan in RT after myself.
After yourself, that's right. Yeah. Go Pack, go. You've been saying that now for 3 weeks. It's the longest stint ever.
Shep, just to get Ivan up to speed, I took on the Packers maybe, how long now, Shep? 4 or 5 weeks ago?
Yes, I believe it was a good 4 or 5. At least it's been a solid month. I mean, you've really been a cheesehead for at least a solid month.
And it's been nothing but success since I jumped on.
Yeah, you did well, because, you know, they were 13-3, but they weren't exactly setting the world alight. So, yeah, you've done well. Fair play. Maybe you're a lucky omen.
I doubt it.
I doubt it for so many reasons.
Yeah. So, Ivan, big weekend for the Cheeseheads. You might tell us, you've been over there. What's it like in those conditions?
Well, the game this weekend isn't at Lambeau, but that's the game that I was at. The Bears were up in Lambeau. And, like, Shep, I don't know if you've been there, but, like, my eyes are there at my husband, and he described it when we were sitting there, like, going to the moon to watch a game. It was completely bonkers. Like,
going to the moon.
It was like you were on a different planet, because we'd never been in that kind of cold before. And, you know, if you're at a match, you're obviously outside for 5-6 hours. It was minus, I think by the time the game was on, it was minus 12.
Yeah.
Minus 10, minus 12, which, Shep, like, we don't get that kind of weather. Like, the people in Wisconsin were asking us. We did loads of chatting, like, locally about everything from Donald Trump to Stephen Avery, but we talked about the weather as well. And they couldn't believe that it doesn't really go below 30, 32 Fahrenheit in Ireland, because we were trying to, you know, make a frame of reference for them. They couldn't get over it, like, so we were blanket into the game, Donica. You would have loved it. We brought, like, you know, the toe warmers for your socks, the hand warmers for your gloves. You know, a little bit of medicinal alcohol at 9 o'clock in the morning to get yourself warmed up a little bit, but like, it was bonkers. I did go for a bottle of water at half time. It took me about 3 minutes to get back to my seat, and when I got back to my seat, it was frozen.
Wow.
So like, if you put a bottle of water in the freezer in Ireland, it's not going to freeze in 3 minutes. So that's how cold
then?
It was.
If everything gets cold really quickly.
So Brian
cold
got
dogs.
Two. Yeah, Brian went down and got two steak sandwiches, or like at after the first quarter, and he brought them back up, and it was like, it was frozen cardboard. Steak with like frozen onion. Like, it was disgusting. It was the most disgusting thing I think I've ever eaten. We were so hungry and cold, we kind of thought, okay, this might warm us up a little bit. So yeah, it was bonkers. And then of course, like, it's bleachers, you have 18 inches each. So to protect your 18 inches, you buy these kind of seat cushion type things. And like, yeah, it's for your arse as well, because it's really cold. It's like aluminium steel bleacher, but also the cushion itself protects your 18 inches, because the Americans, a lot of them are really big. So like, you sit down and you might go to the toilet, you come back and you've got 4 inches to sit on, so you kind of have to squeeze yourself back in. So yeah, everyone is like sardines, which helps with the old body heat as well.
Never mind the Americans, 18 inches, I'd need two of those.
Yeah, it was a bit of a struggle, because I had about 17 layers on as well, which didn't help.
So, Shep, they are meeting, the Green Bay Packers and the San Francisco 49ers are meeting for the second time in 2 months. Last time it didn't end too well for the Packers. They'll have learned a lot, though, won't they?
Yeah, I would think so, Marie. I mean, you're right. This is a rematch of a game from week 12. Green Bay went out to San Francisco and just got destroyed. 37-8 was that final score. Aaron Rodgers, you know, he's a Super Bowl winner. He's a future Hall of Famer. He barely threw for 100 yards in that game the first time. He was pressured all night. But, you know, think about, you know, after a game like that, to get destroyed by 29 points in the locker room afterwards, he says, you know, look, you know, this was bad, but I feel like Roger said, we have the things necessary to bounce back and visit these guys later in the playoffs. And look, here we are. So, I mean, he was pretty clairvoyant. I mean, and as Yvonne said earlier, you know, and we talked about this on Monday. I mean, the Packers are, you know, 13-3, and they get a win in the first round of the playoffs last week. But they're not just, you know, you're not talking about them like as the front runners. I mean, they were probably the fourth or fifth, you know, team that you would talk about. You would talk about the Niners and the Chiefs and the Patriots and the Ravens, and then you might mention the Packers as a Super Bowl contender. But here they are with an opportunity to, you know, go back out to California, where Aaron Rodgers is from. He grew up in Northern California, so this is a bit of a homecoming for him. And they're going to take on, you know, I think the team that's definitely been the best team in the NFC all season, and potentially the best team in football, in the San Francisco 49ers, Jimmy Garoppolo, who could be the next great NFL quarterback.
Do you think, Shep, like, that the defense has really improved at Green Bay? Like, you know, we talk about defenses winning championships. That's something they didn't really have last season. Then Matt LaFleur spent a bit of money, or the general manager spent a bit of money, got the two Smith guys in. Has that made a difference?
Absolutely. And again, we talked a little bit about this on Monday, too. Is, you know, part of the reason why no one's really talking about the Packers as a big contender is Aaron Rodgers hasn't had to have this phenomenal season where he passes for 4,500 yards and, you know, throws 57 touchdowns. You know, they have just, they've been winning with defense. They've been, you know, eking out some close games, and they're just, you know, they're a good football team. They're a solid football team that gotten better. You know, Matt LaFleur is a younger coach, and he's opened up the offense a little bit, done some things that maybe Mike McCarthy has done. And so, yeah, I mean, again, they're just a good football team. Maybe they're not stealing all of the headlines, but I think they're going to be very focused this weekend when they go out to San Francisco. I think it's going to be a very close game, a much closer game than the first time.
See, I think that as well. And like, you know, the way if you're supporting a team, you're kind of like, okay, yeah, the heart says yes, the mind says, the head says no. But like, Aaron Rodgers hasn't been playing magnificently well. He was even making a few dodgy decisions with play calls over the last couple of games. But then, you know, say take the game against the Lions where they had to come back from, I think they were 14 points down at half time and they had to completely turn it around. Do you think when the heat comes on, and obviously this is, doesn't get any bigger than this Sunday night to try and get into a Super Bowl, does Aaron Rodgers have another level? Because if he does have another level, and the likes of Devontae Adams is on fire, and you know, Za'Darius Smith, as you know, all these guys click and play to another level, should we be talking about them as favourites?
Absolutely. I mean, yes, he absolutely has that other level, and he still has it, you know, I guess in his holster, you could say. And that's an interesting point. You know, you're talking about the comeback against the Lions and just previous playoff experiences. I mean, the Packers have all the experience coming into this game. You know, the 49ers, you know, this is Jimmy G's, you know, kind of second full season in San Francisco. He was hurt last year. You know, he got hurt early on in the season. And he played the previous, what, five or six games there after he got traded from New England. You know, they don't, and they won a lot of games. They won the, you know, I think almost every game he started that last year in 2017. But, you know, there's not a lot of postseason experience, you know, here for San Francisco. So I don't know how much of an edge that counts. You know, maybe it's worth a point or two for Green Bay. But again, if Aaron Rodgers can go out there and play the way we know he can play, weather shouldn't be a factor. You know, it's not going to be like that game you were at. It's not even going to be as cold as it was in Green Bay this past Sunday night. I think they have all the potential in the world to go out there and pull off an upset.
Shep, we saw them in the game against Seattle, just the way Aaron Rodgers stood up, his receivers stepped up as well. How much confidence will that fight back give them, or fending off the Seattle last time, how much confidence will that give them this time around?
Oh, huge. I mean, and you know, he had to make a couple of throws, you know, at the end of the game to, you know, pardon the pun, ice it, you know, with the late lead going on. And, you know, he audible to one play and threw an absolute missile on third down, and then the pass to Jimmy Graham and the play that he made. So, again, I mean, this isn't some rookie quarterback who's dazzling everybody or the first time he's been into the playoffs. He's got all of it, and I think that was a huge confidence booster for him and the new coach. You know, Matt LaFleur, it's his first year. He's relatively young when you're talking about, you know, NFL coaches. One interesting note, his brother, Matt LaFleur's brother, Mike, is the passing game coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers.
No
way. So
you're
going to have a little bit of a brother's matchup here. And of course, you feel bad for the parents because, you know, one of their sons is going to win and go to the Super Bowl, and the other one's going to lose. So, you know, they're kind of in a not great situation on one hand. So that's just an interesting subplot of this game.
I didn't know that. That's a serious dynasty in the making, the LaFleurs.
So, Ivan, what are your plans for watching the game?
Okay, so last Sunday night, we watched it at home as normal. We had a little visitor at about midnight, which was really random. Our kids go to bed at 8 o'clock. Yeah. I'm sure yours do too, yeah. Donica. Like lots of disciplined parents go to bed at 8 o'clock, turned around at midnight, and we had our 7-year-old grinning at the kitchen, at the sitting room door, and he stayed up to watch it as well, and he was a zombie. So I think we're going to have a fight on my hands, telling him not to get up again. I think
he might
set an alarm on his Fitbit, which in fairness is genius. So we will probably watch it at home. We were all so tired on Monday though, like it was ridiculous. And then of course the thing is, it's like knockout rugby, this go big or go home. So yeah, we'll probably just stay at home, watch it, but we do have tickets for the Super Bowl screening in town if the Packers get that far.
For a second I thought you meant you had tickets for the Super Bowl.
Oh my god, I am broke after going to Lambeau, so I won't be going anywhere for the next 10 years.
Shep, there is another game this weekend as well. The Tennessee Titans are playing the Kansas City Chiefs. Who do you think will come out on top on that one?
Yeah, so again, Marie, this is another rematch of week 11. It's interesting that both of the conference championship games are rematches from regular season matchups. In that first game, Tennessee went and beat Kansas City 35-32. And, you know, there's a real interesting kind of subplot going on here with this game, and it's about the quarterbacks. You know, Patrick Mahomes is your reigning NFL MVP. But the job that Ryan Tannehill has done with Tennessee since he was named the starter kind of midseason has been nothing short of phenomenal. They were 2-4. You know, through the first month and a half of the season, they had less than a 0.1% chance to win the Super Bowl at that time. And so Mike Vrabel benched Marcus Mariota, who was, you know, one of the top draft picks just a couple of seasons ago, in favor of Tannehill. And now they're one win away from the Super Bowl. So they've clearly gotten much better quarterback play. He's making smart decisions. He's not trying to do too much, turn the football over. And let's be honest, I mean, he's got Derrick Henry. We talked about him on Monday as well, about how phenomenal he's been in the postseason. Listen to these numbers. In the wins over the Patriots and the Ravens, Derrick Henry has run the ball 64 times for 377 yards and a touchdown. And in that Week 11 game, he ran for 188 yards and two scores.
Oh my God.
It's going to be in Kansas City. It's going to be windy. It's going to be cold. The last thing, and Yvonne can speak to this, that you want to do in a game with weather like that is try to tackle a 225-pound running back. So he is going to be the key to this football game and what, you know, how successful he can be on the ground. And then also what Ryan Tannehill can do kind of, you know, with what we call play action. You fake the handoff to the running back and then you throw it to a wide receiver or a tight end. If they're able to be successful like that, they are going to give the Chiefs all they can handle yet again.
They were calling Derrick Henry King Henry in the commentary, and I was thinking, there's only one King Henry, and he's Irish and he plays early. It's Henry Shefflin. Shef, the Titans' defense has stood so firm in their playoff games, but will this be a huge test against the Chiefs' offense?
Absolutely. I mean, again, we talked some more about this on Monday. I mean, the Chiefs are fast at, you know, their running back positions, their wide receiver positions. I mean, it's like a different level of fast, you know, that the Chiefs possess. And again, Patrick Mahomes has got such a great arm. And he's also got who has been, if he's not the best, he's the second best tight end in the league in Travis Kelce. And the other one would be George Kittle, who's the San Francisco 49ers tight end. I mean, those are the two best, you know, tight ends in the league. And that's just a great weapon to have in your offense. And they're not afraid to throw the ball to Kelce 7, 8, 9, 10 times if they have to keep the offense moving. And remember, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, experience. The Chiefs were in this game last year, and they had New England beat up until the last minute or two and just could not hang on. So they've got experience. They're going to be hungry. This is, you know, uncharted territory for the Titans. This franchise hasn't been in the AFC Championship game since, like, 2003. So, I mean, this is just, you know, three generations of players removed from that. So I think a little bit of that experience and the home field advantage is going to play in favor of the Chiefs.
Ivan, who would you rather there heading to the Super Bowl? If the Packers are good enough to get through, who do you want to avoid?
Oh, you want to avoid the Chiefs at all costs. You want to avoid Patrick Mahomes. He's a bit of a genius, isn't he? Like, Marie, you said about the Seahawks, about the Packers, you know, the momentum that they get and the confidence they get from winning that game. Like, the Titans have come from absolutely nowhere. Like, so they have the momentum and they have everything, like, you know, the dreams, and you can just imagine all the VTs and all the different teasers and the stuff that's going to be around the matches on Sunday, like, because that's what it's going to be.
And the hunger, Ivan.
And the hunger, all of that passion, all of that, because the Titans have come from nowhere and they're kind of like the dream team. I would not have thought, like, when you think about it, Shep, like, the Lions, the Ravens, the Vikings, the Patriots, where the hell are they all? And the Titans are going. They're one game away from the Super Bowl.
They're
like,
Mayo.
I just think it's mental.
The Titans are
if they're Mayo, they haven't a hope of getting past the Chiefs. But yeah, no, you want to avoid the Chiefs at all costs. I think the Chiefs will win it out. I even think I do think this Sunday could be a step too far for the Packers. You'd like to think it wouldn't be, but I do think it's going to be a fascinating diehard fans, a fascinating Sunday night. Yeah, I'd love to know what you think, Shep, about Rodgers. I'm a little bit obsessed with him. Like, you know, I just think he's a step above the rest because of what he can do in the split second before the snap. He sees things that other players don't see. So if the defence isn't set up properly or if they've made a substitution, there's an extra player on the field, he sees it, he changes the play call. And so much of what he does, so many of those instances have resulted in moments of magic. Like, does LaFleur and the offensive coordinator staff give him the power and the onus to just make these last minute calls? And because I just think if he has that kind of power on Sunday, all bets are off. Anything could happen.
Yeah, so when you've got a guy with as much experience and has had as much success as Aaron Rodgers has had in the NFL, he's going to have a lot of leeway. And so, you know, the offensive coordinator, you know, will call down a play once they look at the personnel that are out on the field for the defense and maybe where they're lining up. But what winds up happening is, you know, the Packers will break the huddle. They'll go to the line. And then the 49ers will change their defense. And then Rodgers will change the play. And then they may change the defense again, and Rodgers may audible to another play as well. And that all just comes from, again, from experience and knowing, you know, every single inch of that playbook and knowing the tendencies of the players and the tendencies of your players and how do you get them into a situation where they can win in a one-on-one situation. And so, you know, so much of this is physical, but a lot of it starts with the mental ability of your quarterback. And yeah, Aaron Rodgers has complete kind of carte blanche to do what he needs to do once they break the huddle.
Shep, if you want to join the Packers fan club, we're meeting in Ivan's house to watch the game.
About midnight, Sunday night.
Yeah,
there,
just bring Skittles and Tanora for the kids.
And a cheese head.
All right, I'm going to start looking at lights.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette SkinGuard Sensitive, the first razor of its kind designed to stop irritation on sensitive skin. So say bye-bye to shave irritation and razor bumps. Gillette, the best a man can get. Game on 2FM.
Hey!
Donega, a surprise. Your first game on surprise.
Brilliant.
I know you said that you weren't going to mention Dancing with the Stars for the whole show.
I'm on a Dancing with the Stars band. Can we put it aside for a bit?
So who do we have?
Aidan Fogarty, how are you?
Donega, how are you?
I'm great. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm good now. Yeah.
You're looking much. Trim, my man.
Yeah, trim. Half stone down. Only... Four weeks into it.
Oh, whoa. Yeah.
So you're meeting your biggest fan here.
Am I, yeah?
Yeah, this is an official meet and greet.
Yeah, it is, to be fair. You can park all the All-Ireland's kids. Having the nuts to go on Dancing with the Stars is a whole new level.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know what I'm going to get myself into, but it's great crack. It's unbelievable, yeah. Do you watch it?
Does he what?
Yeah. I've four kids at home, and that's just a lovely time. Sit around half six great. On the Sunday, and we're glued to it. But they're all a fan of your dance partners, you know what I mean? So they love all the partners and
The glitz and the glam and all that, is it? Yeah,
exactly. Unfortunately, we had two of the rugby lads in it last year and they were brutal.
I'm surprised you didn't get a call yourself, Donnacan. No, it's something you do.
I chatted to Larry once about it, but Aidan, you know better. You actually know you're going to get better, don't you? Like,
well, I'd be thinking so. Like, I've never danced before ever, like, but I had rhythm. And I like to think that if I said I had something that I would get better at. And I think that's what kind of the show is about, like, you know?
Yeah.
Progress through the weeks and get better. And look, it's how we come across on television too, you know?
See, I knew I wouldn't.
I don't believe that, though. I think you should have tried.
I've told you this before. I found the one position in the one sport that I could dominate in or do quite well in. You know what I mean?
But you'd have so much crack because of the tan and the sparkles and the bright colours.
And let's get to that straight away.
You'd be a tan connoisseur straight away, don't you?
I just a quick lick of Ron Seal and you're away with it.
Oh, God, yeah, the tan. That's a whole new experience for me, yeah.
Yeah. How are you finding it, though? Like, from the group dynamic, that, you know, you're used to moving with a mob and a successful group with Kilkenny and with your club, and now you're very much on your own.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually. I'm kind of used to a kind of a team environment, and I suppose what I'm kind of, I won't say struggling with, but what I find difficult is in training, say with Kilkenny, you go in and you do your training for an hour and a half, and you're getting built up for that hour and a half. You have it done, you're gone, you're out the window, you're back home. Dancing, you're in at 10 in the morning and you're there till 6 in the evening, and it's actually mentally very tough and physically very tough, because you're thinking about the steps, you're doing the steps, and obviously I done the jive first week, and the jive just took it on me. Like, I was carrying knocks all for them 2 weeks. I was, calves were sore, my glutes were sore. I was going back to the old days. I was foam rolling, I was stretching. I was like, I thought them days were well gone, and here I was home at 10 o'clock at night, foam rolling in the apartment. Like, I was just back to it all. But that's what I kind of found the most difficult, was just the all day of it.
That's fascinating. Like, you're a Kilkenny hurler, a winner of 5 All-Irelands. You worked under Brian Cody, and you find dancing mentally tough.
Yeah.
But no, the reason you find it mentally tough is you could walk out the door after an hour and a bit, couldn't you? Like, I remember chatting to Stringer about this, but you know you want to get way better. That's why you've achieved so much. You're not going to walk out the door not being the best on the dance floor.
Well, that's what I said. I said, look, I said, whatever we need to do, I said to Emily Barker's my partner, I said, look, whatever, Emily, whatever I need to do, whatever you think I need to do, I will do it. No matter what it is, I will do it. I put in the hours, you know, I'll do flap back flips, I'll do whatever the case, whatever I can do. And she's actually kind of finds out, she's kind of going, oh, you can do that, or oh, you can do this. Like, we were messing today and I was doing the moonwalk, and she's like, oh, you can do the moonwalk, and I can see you're writing it down.
Oh wow.
So straight away she's like trying to make dances for me already. So like it's progression, and it's so enjoyable. Like, it's mentally thoughtful. It's and the group dynamic, I do miss the group dynamic, because yeah, we train on our own. We're out in Monica Lockman's there in Long Mile Road for this week, and I'm not kind of training with the rest of the guys, because with the rest of the lads, you're kind of training with them, but when you have a break, you're having great crack. Like, you're just messing, because we're not all brilliant dancers, we're out of our comfort zone, we're kind of helping each other along. And it's kind of cliche, everyone's saying, oh, like, you're all like, you're having great crack together, and but we actually are, and we don't want to see anyone go, because it'll be a small bit of the group dynamic gone.
Yeah, you're not really competing against each other, so you're not, it's like against yourself.
For me, it's just to perform as best I can on the night.
Yeah.
It's not for the votes, you know, if it's entertainment at home, albeit if everyone's enjoying it, great. But for me, it's performing on the night to the best I can perform and the best I can dance.
And what's the dressing room been like, in terms of, like, we completely disowned Tomás O'Leary and Peter Stringer within seconds. We were like, oh my goodness, they're doing it. But we were chatting to Onark, and he'd be saying, he never watched before, but he's so proud now when you go out.
It's actually crazy, because I was kind of getting ready for the slagging of it all, and the fake tan and the glitz and the pink pants and the sailor suits and all that.
Sold.
Yeah. You definitely could do a sailor move. If you're watching Sunday night, you could definitely pull off that sailor move.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. I'm glued to it.
And actually, I love the old costumes, because you're kind of acting like.
Yeah.
You know, you're dressed, you're getting into a personality that you're never in before, and you're acting it like. But the lads at home are just going, they're just going, fair play to you. And they're just going, like, they're so kind of proud. Like, the messages coming in are strange, not what I was expecting. They're saying, look, we're so proud, we're all glued to it. And what kind of surprised me as well is the people that actually did watch it before anyway. They're like, oh, we love it. You know, and I'm going, you watched Dance with the Stars on Sunday night, did you? And they're like, oh, wouldn't miss it. I'm like, all right, great.
Has anyone surprised you? Like, anyone that you thought they wouldn't watch that in a million years?
I tell you, it was Brian Hogan actually texted me, and he goes, oh, we love it. And he was at, I got him tickets for the show last weekend, and he was up at it, and he was on cloud nine, and his wife Elaine just loved it as well. And I couldn't see the buzz from, you know, and he was kind of like, oh man, brilliant, like the sailor thing, and it must be like Croke Park, is it coming off? And I'm like it was a serious buzz after the jive. The whole crowd got up on their feet, and it did remind me kind of, you know, Croke Park kind of an atmosphere, a small bit, you know, just that buzz and that, yes, I done it kind of thing. Yeah, so that's a super, yeah.
Everybody was talking about your fast feet afterwards. Is that something you can credit hurling for?
Yeah, I played corner forward all my years, so I'd like to think I had fast feet. I had a quick turn, a turn on a sixpence, I suppose, is kind of the saying. Now I'm 37 now, I wouldn't be able to turn as quick now, but I would have fast feet playing forwards, over the years I would have had, so.
Marty and Bernard have a great bromance from from Dancing with the Stars, their time on it. Is there anyone that you're kind of clicking with that you think, I have a pal for life here?
Yeah, there's a couple of those. In fairness, Seth and Michael Crew got on very well. Even when we met up kind of the Wednesday before it all kicked off, Michael Crew kind of came over, and because I was kind of like, you're going into a room with a lot of personalities. Look, I was a bit out of my depth, I felt, you know, even being up there. And, you know, Mick came over. I think it might be kind of a sporting thing.
Yeah.
You know, we have that in common. And he came over and just chatting away, chatting about hurling. I was chatting about boxing, didn't really know much about boxing. But, you know, sport is amazing the way you can kind of interlink between different kind of, like the rugbys and the hurlings. You still have that thing in common. So is it myself, my crew, Brian Dowling and Ryan Andrews as well. We just seem to have a bit of crack together when we're kind of together in rehearsals. So
Brian Dowling was on Fittest Family, the celebrity edition, and he is some crack, isn't he? Just great, he's fun to be around.
He's just brilliant fun. Like, you look at these people on television and you kind of maybe make a judgment sometimes about the personalities, but Brian Down, we go to the taxi to the show every Sunday morning. 7:30 in the morning, Brian Down is the same 7:30 as he at 10 o'clock at night. He is just constant, and he's not putting it on. It's just his total personality, and he's just brilliant crack. The things
all
and
the
statements he comes out with. Like, if I said some of the things he said, I would not get away with it. That's for sure.
I know you've had more run-ins with him than me, but today I nearly took Davy Fitz out on the road on the way up today. Obviously, Kilkenny and Wexford, they locked horns this weekend. Yeah. Did you get to see it?
I didn't get to see it. And to be honest, like, I'm so much out of sync of what's going on in the world, in Ireland. I don't know. I know Kilkenny got better.
There's an election.
I heard that's the only thing I know. There's an election in February. That's about the only thing I know.
We've had a text in from Greg and he wants to know how you think the 2019 Hurling Championship will go. That's a waste of time asking you, is it?
Well, 2019, yeah. Or 2020, 2020 maybe.
Keep up, Greg, will you?
It's so hard to call. I think with the championship structure, with the way hurling is, you've seen it last year, any team could come out of the bag, you know. But I think Limerick did let it slip a small bit. I think they thought they were ready. But when you think you're ready, and you're not really ready, and I think experience for that team will pay dividends for the 2020 season.
How do you know that? Like, you know what I mean? They thought they were ready. I know exactly what you're saying, but
yeah, I think
how did you spot it?
I suppose a bit from experience as well. I know they were playing Kilkenny on the day, the semi-final day, and I know the way Kilkenny would have prepared, and I just felt that Limerick, they were going so well through the championship, and I just felt that they were playing really good hurling, but it just wasn't happening. The basics wasn't happening right for them. And I just got that feeling that they think they're ready, but are they ready? And they weren't ready. And that's why I'm saying this year that they will have learned from that.
Yeah.
And I think it's more so a training thing, that it's on the training field. Because whenever we would thought we were ready, we'd be training. But Brian Cody called us in and he goes, lads, we could be scoring like 120 a training session. But Brian didn't want to see that. He prefers to see maybe 5 points in a training session. But the absolute doggedness being done, the blocking, the hooking, the harassing, all that side of it. And I just feel that perhaps that was missing in training without them even knowing it.
Do you think they'll be better for the scar of it? You know what I mean? Like you said there, now they know. They know they weren't ready and they will push on.
I think so, yeah. I think they'll learn from it. I think John Kiley will learn from it. And even just the last few games, John Kiley was trying a lot of new players in. And that's just to keep players on their toes, as well as giving the chance. Of course they're going to do that, but I think they will learn from it, because now when addressing them, they'll say, right guys, we thought we were ready for it last year, but we weren't, but we really have to be ready for it this year. I know it's only talk, but that's what they'll have to be doing. Like, and what it comes down to is kind of basics and just grounding themselves, because you can get carried away after being an Ireland champions. Everyone's kind of pulling out of you, and that kind of it can suck the energy out of you without even knowing it. You know, you can be mentally tired. It's like preparing for a match, Donny, because you know well yourself. If you prepare for a match too much, you can lose the match before you actually play the match in your head, because you'd be kind of overthinking it and you're tired come match day then.
I know exactly what you're on about. You might even get it with dancing, but when you step on, your legs feel like jelly.
Jelly.
You're like, or does the pitch feel heavy here?
Exactly, like, yeah, because I don't know what way you do it, but I used to kind of think scenarios in my head about the match, about maybe scenarios what I could be doing, or a block I could be getting in, or what will I do in this situation? And that's draining.
Mm.
And as you said, you can step on the field and your legs are just jelly and you're going, oh God.
So club championship this weekend, but if you're, you know, in the bubble, are you looking to all Ireland final day already, or is it one bite at a time? How are the lads fixed? How do you run in your season?
For the club itself, or for leading on the county?
For that kind of player, the Brendan Mars out there, are they looking ahead, or is it they're looking no further than this weekend?
They're looking no further than this weekend. Yeah, no, and rightly so, because like this weekend is huge. Like it's to be all like to play in a club championship in Croke Park on Ireland Day. It's the pinnacle. I read an article by Parig Walsh. He never even thought or dreamt about it, but it's the best experience that he's ever going to have. And he's lost Ireland's with Kilkenny and won Ireland's with Kilkenny. So to win something with your club is just huge, because it's that tradition of the GAA. It's the kind of humbleness of it all. It's kind of your family. I know it's cliche, it's family and friends, but it really is. You'd see that maybe on county final day in any county at all. You just see it in county final day, that kind of that real wholesomeness about the GAA.
And where would the glitter ball rank now if you were to grab it? Speaking of the pinnacle of your career.
If I won the glitter ball, to be outrageous to even think that. It's first of all, it's a bonus even to be in this competition, even to get that phone call. I don't get phone calls for that like that every day. It's a bit surreal. I never even think about winning it. If I got past week one, not to be voted out first, I think that's everyone's kind of not to go first. I'd be happy. I would like to get maybe 4 or 5 weeks out of it, and anything after that is definitely a bonus. And even I get to the final to be outrageous.
No, you can't say that. That's the typical guy interview. You know what I mean? Nothing to do with me. I scored 418. It just fell off my hurley. We want to hear
my broken hurley.
Yeah, my broken. Yeah. I'm in this to win.
Because everyone else is around me. All that kind of jazz. But no, you'd love to win it, and of course I want to win it. I'd be competitive by nature anyway.
Yeah.
And you'd want to win it, but I'm not saying if I don't win it, I'd be devastated. Like, no way. It'd be an absolute bonus, but. People say it's an entertainment show, and it is an entertainment show, and it is everything, but it is a sport.
It is a sport, but at least in a sport you have a scoreboard in terms of that's justified by your work. But you're getting scored by people's opinions. You know, do you find that hard that it's down to...
They are experts, though.
No, they absolutely are. You don't have to fight it out with Judge Jules. Any man that can wear a jacket like that, I'm a fan.
Yeah. He does wear the jackets, all right.
Oh, yeah. He's, yeah. And the glitter and the hair, I'm there like different levels.
And his entrance even into the whole thing is mental. Yeah, it's brilliant. Like, yeah.
But then you've Brian that probably plays bad cop as well with it.
Yeah,
and
no, he does, yeah.
Yeah, so it's...
And it's all interesting, but yeah, it's true. It's kind of out of your hands. The only thing that's in your hands really is practicing during the week and performing on the night to the best you can. And after that, it's totally up to the public, it's up to the judges, and I respect totally the judges' opinions. Like, they're the professionals, they've done it all. But it is a bit disheartening if you've put in such effort for the last 2-3 weeks, or as time goes on, it'll only be a week to get to learn your dance, and they do scrutinise small things, you know, your feet or your shoulders not touching. It will be difficult, and it is difficult, because even Mary Kennedy last weekend, though, she was brilliant, like.
She was brilliant.
She flowed across the dance floor, and she was so elegant, and Brian was really harsh on her. And
he upset the nation, I thought.
Yeah, and we generally were like, God, that's harsh, you know, and that's only, and I could imagine what Mary was feeling like. So it is, like, when you get a 3, after putting in so much effort all week long, it is disheartening.
Yeah, call him out on that. Wrong, yeah. Brian Redman. Let's get John Hayes to
call him out or give him a brown envelope for me. I'm not sure what I'll do.
We have another text in. It's about Ballyhale Shamrocks. Will they win?
I think so, but I think they'd have to be very wary of what's coming on Sunday. I think Burst Lee, they're a dangerous outfit. They can mix it both ways. A lot of people kind of play Ballyhale, kind of like what they used to Buchel Kenny, and they used to kind of maybe try hinder their strengths, play to their what they want to do. But Bursley mix it, they can catch, they're physical, and they're more direct. It's more of a typical Kenny style, and I'd be very wary, but I think they will, just because of the experience, just because of Henry being the manager, he knows what to bring to it. And I think at that kind of level in an Ireland, you need standout players. And I know they have the Mars and the Stapletons in Bursley and they're fantastic, but I think we just have that extra. If Colin Fennelly doesn't perform, you have TJ Reid, you have Joey Holden, you have Owen Reid in the corner, which, you know, possibly could have made county as well. I think there's too many strong points.
It's amazing. I know Doug Howlett did a bit of work with the Cork hurlers, so he started to learn all about it. And I remember he came in one day and he was there, have you ever seen this guy TJ Reid? And you're like having this chat, but like in all the work that he was doing and watching videos, he was there, this guy's incredible. And then I was there, imagine if he played for us, Doug. You know what I mean? Imagine if he played rugby. This is where our talent is. And
what you're thinking now every time you see hurling these days in football.
Well, I'd like New Zealanders to understand that we're competing with our four choice sport. Imagine if he was talking out.
Imagine.
Himself and Joe up front.
I'd be cleaned off it.
You wouldn't your ear.
DJ Carey, what do you think he's going to add to Kilkenny this year?
Yeah, it's a surprising, yeah. DJ's gone in. Very good. I trained under DJ. I went to college in CIT in Carlow, actually. I went back to college and DJ was training, as I thought he was excellent. But I think what DJ's going to bring to it, he has such respect in Kilkenny that straight away lads are just going to buy into what he says. And I think he's going to probably train the forwards in movement and maybe position wise. He's not going to overtrain him, because if you overtrain him, he's kind of taking that off the cuff kind of thing off him. But he's definitely going to train. I'd say he's got bringing in and talk to the 6 or 7 forwards and do forward training in Kilkenny. I'd say that's what Brian brought him in for.
Just one for me, because I've been there. I remember I got yellow carded in a big game against Toulon away, and it led to our loss. For someone like Richie Hogan, maybe you've chatted to him and been around him. Just how's he been with it all? How have you kind of backed him and supported him? Because, you know, for someone outside and doesn't know the ins and outs, sometimes the blame can land on one person, which is wrong and not right.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah. Look, we back Richie Hogan to the hilt. He's the type of personality that would, I think he'd be confident enough to take whatever is coming his way. As you know, Donnick, look, sport is sport. Richie Hogan didn't mean to do it. I felt that he was going to drive him into the Hogan stand, and rightly so, shoulder to shoulder, all Ireland final today. Like, if he drove Barrett into the Hogan stand, what a lift that would have given Kilkenny. It would have put Tipperary on the back front, and you know, Cottle Barrett's type of player that sets up the player for Tipperary, so it would have been a huge boost if the shoulder came off, but it didn't. And if you look at it back, it's momentum more so than anything. Like, yes, he missed the shoulder, But if I was going, I'd do the exact same thing. I'd reach out to give him some sort of knock, just to make contact in some way. And unfortunately, he caught his jaw and to the sending off. But he's dealing with it very well. Like, I haven't been, I'd talked to him, but I never brought it up. I'd never bring that kind of thing up with Richie. We're all sports people. We know what happened at the end of the day. You know, tip 1-0 Ireland, and rightly so. They were better on the day. But he'd handle it well. He'll come back, I'd imagine, and try and, you know, just try and get back into it and, you know, just prove what kind of a brilliant hurler that he is.
Tunica is brilliant at a team, at giving a pep talk to teams, and he's brilliant in the studio if anyone needs a big lift. So here's your moment now. You're Dancing with the Stars favourite. Give him a pep talk.
Surely about lifts or something I can do, or lifting Emily in the air or something.
Yeah, I'd be no use to be honest. I need to come clean. We're Lottie Ryan in our house, all shouting for Lottie, but you're up there, you're up
there. Thanks, Dominic, I'll take that. You can text twice, you know that.
I'm too miserable from that.
It is 2 euro, though, to be fair. So I'd say you might only get the one text off.
But no, best of luck with it. We hope it goes well for you. It is brilliant. Like, because you're right, you do expose yourself differently than you do normally, togging out. And I do, so much for popping in.
It's an individual thing, and I think everyone's kind of pulling out of the one person rather than a team, because team, like, you know, they can go to 3 or 4 people and they can chat to, but more so now it's all about me and I'm not used to that.
If there was ever an opening for a judge, I think it would be a deadly judge, a kind of half judge, and not judge them on anything, just kind of go like,
you'd be too
would
nice
you be the
everybody.
Nice judge or the harsh, no, I'd would be you be the Simon kind, Cowell or
no I'd be the kind of like, I really like that shirt you wore doing Tiger Feet, you know what I mean? Can you get that somewhere, or just
it was black and amber, to be fair.
As long as it's not Ruby judging anyone, you'll be fine. Aidan, thanks so much for coming
thanks
in
so
and
much,
best of luck.
Best luck.
Thanks
very
much.
Gent.
Pleasure.
2FM. The Thursday Topic on Game On.
Now it is time for our Thursday Topic, and we are delighted to be joined by Brian Gartland, captain of Dundalk, and Declan Lee of Enterprise Ireland to talk about mixing sport and business. You're very welcome to Game On, guys.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me.
So I'm going to start by with you, Brian. Just tell me a little bit about the business that you run.
I suppose, I came in with playing part-time football, and I tried working in an office, just wasn't for me, and then you're having to leave early and get days off and that. So I coached voluntarily before, and I said, why not try set up even 1 or 2 days coaching business, and classes just sort of snowballed a bit from there, and they're going well.
So it's basketball?
Yeah, it's basketball, after school classes. So it's not competitive or anything. It's more to do with social and physical development, and it's all basis of fun, you know, is the main thing, and keep kids in sport. So it's going well from that. It's not massive as such, you know. I did have plan on having a lot bigger by now, but going full-time, I suppose, has curtailed that a bit. So I'm trying to manage it and maintain it and keep it there. So that when I do finish playing, you know, it's something to, I suppose, to have and develop. That's where I went with that, and then so I'm dipping into sports recovery and opening up another business at the moment, hopefully next month there to target that side of it.
Oh, tell us about that.
That's why I'm jumping at this chance. It's Junction 6 there in Castleknock. Premises, the builders are actually in this week. So
LTPeak is there. I've passed it.
We're next door to Aldi Peak, actually, right next door to it. So yeah, as I got older and playing sports, and especially in professional sports, my training got a lot smarter. I suppose I decreased it, and my recovery got a lot better to, I suppose, keep my standards high, keep the body right, and prolong your career, and I suppose get the most out of my body. So from that, I suppose you've got a contrast therapy in terms of hot and cold, infrared saunas, you know, there's many benefits to it. There's lots of myofascial massage tools and stuff like that at the moment. So you've got the massage guns and foam rollers, backballers, things like that, and then compression boots, as well as, I suppose, I'm going to go as far as I can with it and target the other side of recovery. Is sleep is massive, your diet's massive, in terms of, you know, little things like electrolytes, and offer a wide range of services for professional athletes, amateur athletes, anyone that wants to get the best out of their body and I suppose recover from workouts quicker, or have the body in the best shape for a game coming at the weekend.
What about retired athletes there, like Donica?
I suppose he starts going back for a run, he'll need it for a few days after.
I definitely will, but I suppose they're all the things you're chatting about, and I was used to having them within a professional environment, so I could see how someone, maybe an amateur or someone that's looking to maximise their recovery, would look for something like that, because I used to try stuff like that on my own. Like you mentioned, those compression boots, the expense of them to own on your own were massive, you know.
Yeah, they retail probably about 1500, you know, for a pair of boots. Even to get a good cryobat, get into a good cryobat in Dublin, you know, it can be hard enough. There's not too many about, and then you're looking for availability, and you fit two people at a time. So we've looked to build one to fit four or five, so we can get teams in together, and you know, people can come in, there's individual bookings, and then there'll be, if a team wants to book it out, the room will be closed off to them, and you know, you have that environment to do your recovery cool down session together behind closed doors, and everybody's busy at the same time in one room, you're still together. But yeah, Dunica touched on it there. He's lucky he's in a sport that's, you know, it's really well ran, and there's great development's been in it financially as well. You know, Leinster or the RFU are going over into Abbottstown, I think, as well, and they'll have all that side for their players. But a lot of our Olympic athletes and stuff like that don't have, I know they have a few pairs of the boots, but they don't have everything together in one, you know, to do a full recovery session, to do the best out of you. So I'm looking to, yeah, you amateur, professional, semi-professional, the service, it's growing. I think TJ Breslin has one down in Cork. There's Damien Comer's only after opening one now in Galway. Kieran in Cullaville, who's been a great help to me, has one, things like that. So yeah, it's a side of fitness that's, I suppose, been neglected, and I'm 8 months now planning this, so I'm dying to get going. And
Declan, you work for Enterprise Ireland. Have you encountered many people like Brian who are athletes, footballers, former players who are still juggling careers and trying to figure out what they're doing, who want to get into business and keep up their sport?
It's very common. There's a lot of sports people end up going into business in one way or another, whether they're employed by companies or whether they want to start up themselves. The only thing, there isn't an actual pathway for it at the moment, and that's what we've been looking at. So there's plenty of supports out there for if you want to link sport and education, if you want to do scholarships and degrees and things like that. But there's no practical approach to leaving sport, or while you're in sport, and starting a business, or starting a business when you're leaving sport, whether it's due to retirement or injury or anything like that. So that's what we've been looking at. And this is a way that athletes can get involved while they're still competing, and hopefully, you know, put the attributes that they have as sports people, which are very similar to those that an entrepreneur would have, whether it's that passion, goal setting, drive and things like that, and put those to use within their own business.
Declan, I used to always get a kick out of, we used to train in the CIT, so you pass the Rubicon, which is a kind of startup hub, and you used to pass it in your gear, but you could see all the, maybe people inside were thinking, oh, the lucky ducks, like heading out for training, whereas we were looking in going, I'd love to have something going there outside of rugby that I could be kind of tipping away a bit. But how do you find the spot that's right for a player? You know, like, it's so funny, you chat to any, I know certainly in the rugby environment, coffee shops, it's like every rugby player wants to have a coffee shop, you know, but they're not all suited to that type of small business. Like you were saying, maybe more are suited to different things. How do you find out the perfect fit?
Exactly. Well, this new program, the Sport to Startup program with the local enterprise offices, this actually will bring them through that process. So if they've got an idea or a passion, we start out with that. We kind of vet the idea. Is it workable? Does it exist at the moment? Can we tweak it? Bring it through a business, right through to a business plan at the end, that you can go and you can get funding, whether it's from Enterprise Ireland or whether it's from their local enterprise offices or even a private investor. Because I suppose a lot of sports people have the ability to maybe open doors that a normal sports or a normal entrepreneur can't do. I mean, if you know, if somebody rings up and says, I'm Dunica O'Callaghan, you're probably going to get a meeting ahead of somebody who's a Joe Soap business person who just says, I'd like to meet about a new business that I'm getting up and running. So sports people have that kind of competitive edge, and they can bring that into a business. But as you say, a lot of existing sports people get approached to come on board with businesses, whether it's co-founders or as an investor if they have access to funds. And a lot of them won't know what a business should look like, and a lot of them just go in because it's something to keep them going and something to do outside of sport and maybe a focus afterwards. So this program actually will give them a good grounding in what a business should look like, whether it's from financial bookkeeping, whether it's auditing, marketing, research, sales, everything right through to a business plan. So hopefully that will be of use to current and former athletes.
Brian, by the sounds of it, it's something that would benefit someone like you in a big way.
Yeah, well, I actually have benefited from it. I've done an enterprise course as part of my degree in UCD many years ago, 13, 14 years ago. So that's what stemmed this side of it in me. And, you know, I met Declan before about this and I thought it was a great idea. Because it just, yeah, it opens your eyes, it opens your head and your thought process. And like you said, in sports, there's a lot of lads with ideas, but they just don't know where to start even. So it gives it that opportunity. And it's not too demanding of time, because I suppose Donegan knows when you're playing sports, like it was grand when I was part-time before. When I went professional, like you always have to give your all, whether it's part-time or professional, to your sport, and that's what is expected. So there's a balance to be met there. So this is great for that, because it's not too demanding in terms of time, and it's specific to sports people.
What have been the biggest challenges that you've faced, Brian, in trying to juggle a professional, very successful football career and get business going as well?
The biggest thing is change of schedules. Like, you know, you don't have... We could be training at one time and then you get told, listen, it's changing to another time. And I have a class of 30 kids that are being collected from class and brought over to the community centre. That's, I suppose, one of our unique selling points. Parents don't have to collect them for an extra hour then at that age. And then I'm under pressure trying to get someone, even a friend, to do a favour that's a coach. And, you know, it's last minute and it's pressurised and stressful like that. But you learn over time to manage things, and you learn to have people about you, and, you know, that are good help, and the right ones and the wrong ones find their way.
Declan, just on that, obviously Brian, like, is savvy and knows what he's about, but we hear it so often, and especially with more mature professional sports, the NFL, an awful lot of those players are bankrupt really soon after retirement. What's right for Brian isn't right for maybe someone else in his dressing room. And how do you nearly weed out the guys that you nearly say at the end of the process, look, maybe starting your own business isn't the right move for someone here, whereas it's perfect for Brian and there's another option?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, I suppose that's kind of what the program does. It brings you from a starting point of what you'd like to do or what you think is a good idea to a point where, is this viable, would this work? And I mean, the local enterprise offices will tell you, you know, this is going to work or this is not going to work, and at the end of the day you will or you won't get funding for it after that. So that's going to determine, you know, whether their business is a success or not, or whether they can kind of bring it forward. So
can I jump in on the back of that just to say, like, if it isn't for them and you don't have, you know, setting up your own business isn't for you, you're coming out of that better educated. You're coming out of that after learning more and gaining valuable, you know, information. And I suppose that's what I think we'd like to see a lot of other organisations or departments doing, is doing stuff to help sports people in terms of education, in terms of courses, because it can be hard to do them when you're playing, because, you know, you're training during the day when classes do be on and different things. So I suppose just to go off side of that, for the people that wouldn't be interested in that, it'd be great to have a sports education board that, if you had it all rolled into one, to offer athletes of every sport courses that was, you know, and it's more suited times, more suited them, you know, that would target that side of things for people that aren't going into business startup, but it'd give you every opportunity after your career.
Ryan, I'd imagine as well, with how fickle sport is, and at the moment how fickle the League of Ireland is, that it is really important to have something else, or to at least have your mind open to other things.
Yeah, that was a decision I sort of came to when we were 2016. We were still training in the evenings, we were part time. Then we got to Europa League, you know, it sort of went afternoons, and that was the biggest challenge for me then, because I couldn't be a coach and I had to get someone else just take it over for me. And really then, you know, I'm not making much there, and I just had to sacrifice that for a while to put my football first, and that was a decision I had to make. But 2018 we went full time, we went mornings, and I had to make the decision, do I take up this contract and take a step back from what I was doing outside of football, but try and maintain it, like I said, for after football, or do I say no to the football and go the other way with business, because I was 30-31 years old, and you don't know when it's finished, let's be honest, you know. And especially, like you say, volatile, you know, we do earn a decent enough living wage in the League of Ireland or the top of the league, but it can be gone in a year or two, so is it worth sacrificing other opportunities for? So yeah, that's a decision that has to be made and weighed up by, I suppose, each individual's.
Declan, just having worked with athletes now and seen people come through and be successful, what are the major skills that people take from sport that they can apply to business?
I mean, you're looking at goal setting, being able to plan out and structure what you're going to do. Athletes and sports people are well used to that. That kind of passion, that drive, that determination, all of those, like if you were to mirror the attributes of a sports person and a successful entrepreneur, they'd be quite similar. I mean, when people walk into the local enterprise offices, Enterprise Ireland, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for that passion. And at the end of the day, athletes and sports people want to win. So whether that's on the field or in the pool, they, you know, they want to win, and they'll want to win a business. And I mean, that gives them that extra edge, I suppose, as potential startups or entrepreneurs.
Have you come across any former players who wanted to be radio presenters?
I was just about to say, you got stung with your one.
Planning, goal setting. It's like, yes, we've got dinner at 5 o'clock, dinner at 1 o'clock.
It's all our own food.
I'm going to be able to eat all of this.
But Declan, just on that, how important is it to work with the clubs then? You know, like just in Brian's case there, just that relationship with the club, because for some players, you're right, after a tough day's training, it is easy to walk out the door, whereas if there was a tie with the club or the sporting body, it makes it easy for the player.
Yeah, it's something we've done a lot of work on in the last few months. We've spoken to the PFAI, Rugby Players Ireland, GPA, they've all been massively supportive of this, and I suppose it's linking in with them, knowing their expertise and how best to administer this. But I suppose from a practical perspective, if you're looking to start up a business, and Brian will know, if you're training at certain hours or certain points of time, it's going to be hard to get a job in a normal job that will facilitate that. Whereas if you're starting your own business, you can create a business essentially that you can work your own hours. If you are training in the afternoon, you can work in the morning. If you're flying to a meet in Switzerland, in the hotel, you can work on the plane. So you can make it work around you if you actually have the drive to do it. So actually, you know, a lot of sports people are looking at, well, I'm finishing up, I want to, you know, I need to get a job. Well, why not just go and create your own job? And, you know, create your own business and help maybe create jobs for other people. So,
Brian, did you get much support from the club? Like, there can be a stigma as well, being the guy that's thrown on the shirt to run out the door after training. They kind of feel that, you know, is he cutting a corner, or is he not mind fully on the game and the game only?
Yeah, you sum up perfectly, I suppose, what I was thinking there is, I've got great support from the club, mainly because I had this when I came into the club, and it was part of, say, my negotiations, was say, listen, I need to keep this on. And especially when we went full time, the club been brilliant for me that way, you know, the management, and it's been, you know, a bit of a balance between it, and there's an understanding, and there's also that feeling from my part that I have that feeling that, you know, we're in pre-season now, so instead of just one of the days I'm meant to, you know, maybe not do a gym session and do it myself later on, but in pre-season I decided I need to be here and I need to be doing all the training sort of thing, so I sacrifice a day that I'm meant to be down there, and that's just how it is. But yeah, they've been really supportive and good to me, so yeah, you don't want to take advantage of it, and you want to make sure, you know, you reciprocate that back.
Brian, it must be great for other footballers in the League of Ireland to see that it can be done as well.
Yeah, it is, especially at full time. But I suppose Donica asked how the clubs would feel about it as well, and yeah, I suppose the clubs wouldn't want it too on. If you want a player there and you want the player giving your all for your team, You don't want them to having too much distractions or too much, I suppose, commitments outside. So there is a balance like that, and a player needs to realise that if they are doing something outside.
Best, and I've had an example of that. When I moved over to Worcester first, they tie in with the players' unions and all the players' welfare groups, but they've someone in-house to look after players' development for after rugby. Lynette Cutting was over there, and she was the first person I met when I went in the door, and she'd been through my education. I was there, why haven't you finished your degree? And she basically man-marked me until I finished my degree. I got a phone call 2 weeks ago from her saying, your CV still isn't good enough for her standard. And I found that brilliant, that there was someone within the club taking control of it, as opposed to saying, oh, that's with the GPA, that's with the player's body. It was someone within the club going. And she organised stuff. She organised for lads to do trades. She even used our gym, our own gym in Worcester, to do strength and conditioning courses, because she's there, you're not going to get a better facility than something like this. So it was just being able to use it.
Yeah, and I think that comes down to finance again in the end. Obviously, you know, there's great finance behind there, so the club can employ someone like that. Unfortunately, I suppose, from my part, in the League of Ireland, you won't have that. But we've got Emma in the PFEI now doing a great job at that the last few years, and I know there's a few lads, and she helps them with their degrees and their courses going through, and she's inviting in as many people to make appointments with her for life after sport. So in terms of football, that's been addressed by the PFEI there, and I suppose, yeah, it's all about balance in the end. You know, you need to make sure that it's not taken from your game.
But it's a tie-in with the club as well. Actually, Lynette was just a retired principal. She was finished, so she was quite happy to come in. And that's the beauty of a club, isn't it?
You know, I'm sure there's many people around every club, you know, with the experience and retired like that, that are, exactly, you know, they would be inclined to do that.
So use your club, you know what I mean? Yeah. In the same way there's
use
times...
your community around you, yeah. People are offering, yeah. Yeah, and I know there is people up in Dundalk anyway that would jump at the chance to do that.
So Declan, if people want to join the course, where can they find it?
localenterprise.ie/sport, and they get it there. They get all the information. There's a taster session tomorrow in partnership with Sport Ireland at the Institute. So you can still register if you're a full-time sports person and interested in coming along.
And Brian, if anyone wants to drop their kids to your basketball after school care or to go for some recovery sessions, where can they find it?
I have four ready to go.
It's bgb.ie. It's based out in Knockline. So it's a lot, mainly kids from St. Colum Kills School here in Knockline. Just happens to be a big school with about 1,600 kids, so good placement. And look out for the new recovery room going to open up in Junction 6. So looking forward to that.
Very good. Brian Gartland from Dundalk and Declan Lee of Enterprise Ireland, thank you very much for joining us on Game On.
Thanks.
FM. Game on 2FM.
I'll be completely honest, he was great, wasn't he?
He was funny, he was entertaining, he was good on Kilkenny, an all round kind of character.
Yeah, he was, and you could see, like, he's very much got his head into his new discipline with dancing, isn't it? Like, you can see he's
playing it down, but oh wow, I'd say he's so competitive. Like, he was giving it the whole GAA speak, going to take each dance as it comes, each week as it comes, you know, it's almost a show of two halves, but I'd say he is thinking about absolutely nothing else except getting better at dancing and excelling, because that is what Kilkenny people do.
Why were the rugby lads so bad then?
See, as he said himself there, like, he had such quick feet. He was known as someone that could turn on a sixpence. He was a corner forward. He was fast. He could shake somebody off. They kind of have those skills that maybe rugby players, especially ones of the larger size, mightn't have.
Do you know what happened one time? We got a great strength and conditioning coach over, Damien Mendes, one time from he was from Queensland, and his big area of expertise was speed, agility, quickness, going through drills, and he put loads of us through it and we were awful. He was so cross, so grumpy, and then all of a sudden Tomás O'Leary went through the drill and he was there. What's the story with him? And we're there, that's Seanie O'Leary's young fella, that's he just, you know, breaking into the side. But he was there, how come he can move like that? And you're right, it's that background with GAA that just makes the footwork just incredible.
A lot of the guys who, footballers who go to play Australian Football League in the AFL, they excel in the tests, especially the speed. Like, they're often the quickest over the first 30 metres. But when you look at, especially I think the game of hurling and the amount of skills that go with it, so not only do you have to be able to move and think and look up and be aware, like, the game itself, it just requires so much skill and so much speed. So I can see how the skills that he's developed as one of the best hurlers in the country during his time, how he's able to transfer those skills to dancing, like, to be able to even think ahead of the moves and what you have to do. Like, that's almost like, you know, being able to play a hurling match, be able to catch the ball and send it forward. We've had a good few texts in about him as well. He seems like a very popular guy. Aidan Fogarty, what a great interview. You were brilliant. I hope you go on and win it. And you should have Aidan on more often. He was great and funny.
We should have him on more often. Imagine if there was a big hurling championship coming up and we could chat to him about how it was all going.
Imagine that on a sports show.
That'd be brilliant. And a bit of dancing.
Do you think we'd end up talking more about dancing or more about hurling?
Hurling at the time, to be fair. But let's give dancing its window. As soon as him and Michael Carruth are either lifting the glitter ball or gone, I promise we won't chat about it anymore.
Well, we'll have to talk about Lottie Ryan.
Oh, absolutely.
Our winner, colleague.
All right. Oh, he's handsome, isn't he? What's his name? Pascali? Have you seen him? He is a vision.
You always bring it back to how handsome the men are.
He is, honestly, he's a lovely looking man. Like, it's wrong not to be able to say that. That is a handsome man. Honestly.
I think you're going to have to get...
If I was him, I'd carry a mirror constantly around with myself.
You're going to have to get a chart so you can put your favourites on top. Like, is it Stephen Kelly? Is it Pascali?
Pascali's number one by a country mile. I actually was looking up, can you get his shirt in a triple XL? Imagine that. I'm just putting it all down to, if I had a shirt like Pascali, I'd be all right.
I think you should do a hairstyle like Pascali as well.
Oh, I'd never get there. No, my head is too much like a tennis ball.
So amongst all the excitement, we didn't get to share our moment that we had with Shep earlier. He is a big LSU fan and he told us about how excited he was about their win. So Shep, anything happened in your life in the last few days?
Well,
how are the Tigers?
Hey, there you go.
Speaking of watching television with your children, we stayed up Monday night, my 11-year-old and I, and watched the college football national championship game, where the Louisiana State University Fighting Tigers beat the Clemson Tigers to claim the school's fourth national championship and to cap off a perfect 15-0 season. And Joe Burrow, the Heisman-winning quarterback, was phenomenal again. He had 6 touchdowns, and the game was in New Orleans. You know, we talked about it being just 90 miles away from campus, and it was just phenomenal. It was just such a great win for LSU and the state of Louisiana and everybody who's a film. It was phenomenal.
Shep, the celebration sounded absolutely legendary. Let's hear from some excited fans.
Oh! Can you feel it? Baton Rouge! Can you feel it? LSU! Can you feel it? Louisiana! 15-0! Trevor Lawrence! 29-0! 29-1! Get the hell out of here, Clemson! There's only one Tiger! There's only one Death Valley! And it's right here! The greatest team in college football history! And LSU are champs once again! Let's go!
Shep, was that the image of your house? You and your 11-year-old going crazy?
Yeah, there was a lot of that in my house. There was a lot of that across South Louisiana. Just to give you guys some context, so that's a guy named T. Bob Hebert. His dad played quarterback for the Saints and is an announcer for the Saints as well now. T. Bob played center at LSU, so he's intimately familiar with the program. And he was just slightly fired up on his radio show Tuesday morning. But he was really kind of giving voice to, I think, what a lot of us were feeling and kind of still feel as well.
Joe Burrow, where's he going to end up? Because, you know, everybody's going to want to take him, aren't they?
So the Cincinnati Bengals have the number one pick. They are in desperate need of a quarterback. It really is kind of a phenomenal story to watch what had happened with Burrow. You know, he went to Ohio State. He's originally from the state of Ohio. He goes to Ohio State. He doesn't really play at all. He graduates, and so they have this rule in American sports and football. Once you graduate, you can transfer if you have still got years of eligibility left. Well, he graduated in 3 years, which means he still had 2 years of eligibility left, so he came to LSU. He had a pretty good season last year. He was having a very good season to start this year, but around early November when they beat Alabama, it just took off. And he went from like a fifth-round draft pick before the season to the likely number one overall draft pick in April once we get to the draft. So he's just had an unbelievable season, and it looks like he's going to be heading back to Ohio to play for the Cincinnati Bengals, which, I mean, isn't great, but they're going to pay him a lot of money to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a dream come true for him no matter what. His parents have featured a lot as well on a lot of the coverage because, like, I actually watched the college ball games on Saturday night as well. And his mom and dad have featured a good bit on the coverage. Like, and he, you know, when he's interviewed, he's one of those players. He's mature and he's grounded, and you just know he's a good guy and he's got all the right attributes for, you know, a leader, a quarterback. So yeah, Cincinnati Bengals could be my second team.
There you go.
Dunners will be on that as well. Yeah. Shep, thanks so much for joining us. I was reading that the LSU teamer might be heading to visit President Donald Trump in the White House. We will talk to you about that on Monday. Thanks again.
Okay, that's it. A massive thank you from all the team on Game On. Conor Bean's up next, and later on tonight, the brilliant Dan Hegarty is bringing you highlights of the first day of the Eurosonic, Europe's biggest indoor winter music festival, and he's an incredible interview with Inhader, so you don't want to miss the brilliant Dan tonight at 10 o'clock. Thanks for listening. Conor's up next.